So we're so eager to share some of the stuff that we've learned over the years in the research. And about 10 years ago, we had just done a talk about the research that we had conducted with the happiest couples. It's actually the stuff we're going to be talking about tonight. And after we got done with that talk, which was about like some of the secrets, the habits that these happy couples do that are actually kind of surprising. Mm-hmm. So after we had got done with that, we were standing in the back in the retreat center, and a gentleman who was probably 15 years older than me walked up to me, handed me a folded piece of paper, and walked away. And on the folded piece of paper, I looked at it, and he had written "The Secret to a Happy Marriage." So curious, I unfolded it, and here's what he had written. He said, "So when my wife and I were first married, we came to an agreement that she would handle all of the minor decisions that would face our family, and I would take care of and decide all the major decisions." And then he wrote, and he said, "And honestly, I can honestly say that after 40 years of marriage, we have never had a major decision." So everything, fellas, that we're going to be talking about this weekend can be summarized in that gentleman's statement.
No.
So why don't you tell them what we are going to be
talking about? What are we going to be talking about? So as Jeff mentioned, and as Pastor Casey was talking about, we've been doing social research for about the last 22, 23 years, something like that. And what we're primarily working on, especially when it comes to something like marriage, but not just, we've done other studies as well, like my latest one is on mental health. But what we tend to do is we're trying to dig out what are the little things that really truly will make a big difference to help us thrive in our lives, in our relationships. And one of the patterns that we have seen that is going to go underneath everything that we're talking about this weekend is that so often when we have issues, when we have heartache, when there's frustration or irritation in our marriages, it's usually not because of the big ticket issues. Now, those big ticket issues do exist. You know, somebody was abused as a child and it's filtering into everything in their marriage, or there's an addiction or whatever it is. Those, of course, they exist, but that's usually what's not causing when you have day-to-day frustration or irritation or heartache or hurt. Usually what we found is that in the vast majority of marriages, even ones that are struggling, you have a husband and wife who deeply care about each other, deeply. And both people are trying really hard, but maybe because they don't know certain things about what's going on under the surface in the other person, or maybe they don't know certain things that really matter, that are habits that could be built that make a big difference, whatever those things are, so often we are trying hard in the wrong areas. And we're missing each other, and we're not making each other feel cared for in the way that you think you should feel cared for after all my hard work, right? Or maybe even we're trying hard and we're hurting each other, and we would never intend to. And so everything that we're going to be talking about this weekend are all those little things that matter that we often don't know matter, so that when we're trying hard, we can try hard in the right areas. And it makes so much difference.
And if I were to boil down what our hope is for you all for this weekend, is that you'll walk out of here with some information, but realistically, you're going to forget a whole lot of it. It's just what we do.
We wish people wouldn't, but we know.
We all know, you know. But if you walk out of here with a sense of hope for your marriage, that, okay, maybe we can do a few of these things. Maybe we can kind of change some patterns and see some things change
and make
in our relationship.
A good marriage even better.
Sure.
No matter where you are in your marriage right now.
So Can you run through the agenda maybe real quick?
Okay.
So that we all have
So we all have kind of the same idea of what's happening this weekend. So tonight we're going to break the evening into two parts. So for about the next hour, we're going to be talking about what are these secrets of the happiest marriages? What are they doing differently? And then we're going to take a quick break so you guys can go get sugar out in the lobby and take a bathroom break, whatever. And then we'll come back.
How long is the break, did you say?
15 minutes.
15 minutes?
And we'll tell you when we get there. We'll see how much time we have. But then the last session is going to be shorter. But the last session is going to be on that topic that we really do have to cover if we're doing a marriage conference. Can anybody take a guess what that is? Somebody yelled out. I asked people to guess. One guy yelled out, gardening.
Maybe that's what he wanted to hear.
Yes.
I think others, something
I know.
Else.
People are like, can we say sex in a church? Are we allowed? Anyway, so we will be talking about that topic. And that is based on a relatively recent research study. Whoa, we found some fascinating things. So that will be the rest of this evening. And then tomorrow morning, we're going to be diving into what are the kind of the secrets that are going on inside each of us. These tend, they are not always, but they tend to be very tied to some of the neuroscience and the differences between men and women. And so it tends to come up a lot in marriage. So we're going to be talking about those things. And for those of you who are interested, I know that this church is doing the for couples only study signups. I don't remember when you guys are starting it. I think it's just in a few weeks.
May 17th.
There you go. May 17th. See, he knew. And so we're going to be giving you a sneak peek for that study because there's some overlap to get you started. And then the last session of the day is going to be a Q&A session. So
great.
Can I get them started?
Sure.
Set up? So we were having a few technical issues, so we don't have the slides up, but I'm going to suggest if you guys are interested in participating in the live Q&A, which is the last session, I'm going to tell you how you can log in, and then we're hoping we're going to actually have the slides up on the screen. But at the moment, you can at least log in on your phone and get started putting in questions as they occur to you. And you'll be able to vote up the questions that you find most interesting that other people sort of ask. When you put your question in, you're not going to see it appear in the portal right away. We look at the questions, and we're primarily going to be releasing the questions that would apply to most people. Stuff that might be very like nuanced and apply really only to one couple, we would encourage you for those to ask a pastor, ask a counselor, that kind of thing. But here's what you're going to do. You're going to go on your phone to slido.com. This is slido.com. And this is not, you don't need to download anything. You don't need to put your email address in. This is literally, you're going to just tell Slido this number, and it's going to put you into this room so that Slido knows these questions are for this group of people. So go to slido.com and put in this number. Ready? 34545. So hopefully that's pretty easy. 34545. And what we're going to suggest is as we're going, ask the questions that occur to you. And so that way you don't forget them. And then as we go, I'll be looking at the questions that come in and I'll release a bunch of them so that you guys can see each other's questions and vote them up. So if you see me looking at my phone, I promise you I'm looking at your questions and I'm not texting my kids. Like, I promise. Okay? So that'll get us started, and hopefully we'll get the technical issues resolved, and we'll be able to see the stuff on the screen.
So how do we get started with this particular topic? So we had written the Four Women Only, Four Men Only books, which we'll be talking about the research on those tomorrow. But we began to wonder, we'd love to know what the happiest couples, what do they do differently than most people.
The rest of us mere mortals.
Yeah, mere mortals that make us, that can tend to make them so happy. Could they articulate it? So we always begin our research projects not knowing what we're looking for.
Yeah.
And it's kind of just talking to people. That's what we do initially. And then they end up with, we end up with a bunch of hypotheses that we test out on a nationally representative survey. So with this particular one, when we would do a conference like this, this is 15 years ago or so when we started the research for this, we would ask the hosts to identify four or five couples in their community that they felt had the happiest marriage.
Strongest,
happiest, all of that.
Marriages, yes.
And get them to agree to sit down with us, each couple, for about an hour at a time. And then we could just ask them questions. And so it was really fascinating.
It was
as we would ask. And we would start off almost always by saying, if you had to attribute your happiness, your success in marriage to anything, what would it be? And almost to a couple, they'd look at each other and say, we really communicate well. And I'd go, okay, that's great. What does that mean? And they'd say, well, we communicate well. And they really couldn't articulate what it was that they did that made them happy, that they felt,
that
you know,
mean?
Really worked in their marriage. And so as we were talking with them, and this is now dozens and dozens and dozens of couples, we began to hear kind of similar things, using different words, different word pictures. But ultimately, we began to see kind of patterns that were unfolding in their lives. And so that ultimately became the research project, which became then this book, which
has The Secrets of the Highly Happy Marriage.
Secrets of the Highly Happy Marriage, which we identified 12 habits
yep.
that these happy couples do.
And we're not going to get to all 12 tonight. We're going to try to get to 5 or 6. We'll see how we go. And feel free in your Q&A, like if you, again, if you want to put in questions, feel free to ask about other ones too.
Yeah.
Totally fine. So do we want to jump
in? I think we should jump in.
Okay, perfect.
Let's go.
So we're going to start with the first of these secrets of the happiest couples. This is one that we say, honestly, if you only remember one thing that we say this whole weekend, let it be this one. Because this is one of the things that we've seen statistically is almost a prerequisite for having a strong, healthy, happy, joyful marriage. And so here's the secret. It is, and please take notes, write these in your phone, like capture this stuff, okay? The happiest couples choose to believe the best of their spouse's intentions towards them, even when they are legitimately hurt. Let me say that again. This secret of the happiest marriages is that these spouses choose to believe the best of their partner's intentions towards them, even when they are legitimately hurt. Everybody gets hurt, even in the best marriages. We hurt each other's feelings. Yeah. I love what one guy told Jeff.
He said, look, he said, to be honest, even the kindest, godliest man or woman can be a jerk at times. I mean, the fact
Nobody
of the matter
in
is,
here.
No, none of
Nobody
you guys, but he was talking about others. But really, I mean, we're sinful, flawed creatures. And sometimes we do hurt one another's feelings. I mean, it just happens.
And so what we found statistically, and these are big nationally representative, very robust surveys. These are not Facebook polls. We've spent almost $900,000 over the last 22 years in order to bring really good, rigorous data.
And that still hurts every time she says that. Gosh.
He's like, he gets twitchy. Like, I get it. But this is one of the patterns that if you will lean into this and figure out what it looks like in your marriage, it will make such a difference. So let me share. This tends to be how this works in most of us and in most marriages. If Jeff does something that hurts my feelings, And not that anything like he would ever do that, but hypothetically, if he were to do something that would hurt my feelings, the natural human tendency that we have is to kind of feel the ow. And then subconsciously, the natural human tendency is to kind of think to ourselves, you know, he knew how that would make me feel and he said it anyway. And we don't realize it, but what that translates to is he doesn't care about me, right? That's what that translates to. Maybe for a guy, it might sound a little different. Like you might have that ow and you kind of think to yourself, nothing I do is ever good enough for her. And what you're thinking, again, is she doesn't appreciate me, right? And so what we found with the happiest couples, and by the way, you need to know this, this included a study group. We had 1,000 couples in our study group. And this included about 100 and something, 150 of these couples. They had actually gone from being in the most desperate place in their marriage, the most challenging marriages, to being these highly happy couples. And we were particularly interested, how did you get from here to there to here, whatever, anyway. And so this is one of the things. And so here is what they had learned to do. They still had, the happiest couples still had the ow, and then they went, no, mm-mm, no, I know he loves me. I know she appreciates me. So they must not have known how that would make me feel, or they wouldn't have said it. And they're flipping to believe a more generous explanation of the other person's behavior or words or things that hurt them. And that one thing can radically transform any marriage, a good marriage making it great, but especially if you're in a struggling place, what we found is that this is one of those factors that is absolutely pivotal. And by the way, just so you know, this is not wishful thinking. This is not the power of positive thinking. Statistically, this is how we feel. We deeply care for one another. It wasn't 100%, but it was really darn close. It was something like 99.26 something something percent of people deeply care, even in the most struggling marriages, the ones that were closest to disintegration. It was 97%. We care about each other, but if you want a strong and happy marriage, if you want to work towards that, you have to let yourself believe it.
And you know, we oftentimes hear that, you know, marriage takes two, you know, and of course, you both should be leaning in and trying to apply the various things that can help your marriage to grow and thrive. But what we found from these 12 habits is that if just one person in the relationship were to begin to apply certain of these things and do them, it can transform the relationship. Now, I love, as we were doing the research on this, I happened to come across a study that was conducted by a professor at the University of Maryland called The Power of Good Intentions. That's what the study was ultimately called.
You can go look it up. It's really interesting.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. And first off, I got to tell you, I love college students because for like $20, they'll subject themselves to just about anything. And in this particular study, it really was one of those just about anythings. Because here's what happened. There was a chair that a student subject was sitting in, and they were hooked up to all sorts of biometric measuring devices, measuring their heart rate, blood pressure, perspiration rate, respiration rate, all of those certain things and factors, and trying to understand the impact of a particular stimulus upon them, the impact physiologically on the student subject. Now, they were also hooked up to a cable that was run across the auditorium and disappeared behind a partition. On the other side of the partition was a little device with a red button on it. And if someone pushed the red button, it sent an electric shock through the cable to the student. Now, I don't know the ethics of all of this stuff, but they got paid $20. So they are sitting there, and here's the twist in the whole thing. They were told, the student subject was told one of three different things about whoever it was behind the partition. In one instance, they were told that the person behind the partition pushed the button, knew that it was going to send a shock their way, but also they'd been told that by pushing it, it will also help the student win money.
So kind of a good intention, yeah. Right? Like they're actually trying to help yeah. you. I know it hurts, but they're trying to help you.
Yeah. In a second instance, they were told that the person pushed it, but it was all on accident. Didn't mean to. And in a third instance, they were told the person knows that it's sending a shock and thinks it's really cool. So not such a great intention. So in all cases, the shock was exactly the same. But here's what happened. If the person thought that the person was doing it on purpose and with no good reason, but kind of being cruel almost, it hurt and it measured on their all the devices and on their body. The impact it hurt at this level. If they thought the person was doing it on accident, it hurt less. And if they thought the person really had a good intention, good heart toward them, it hurt considerably less. The shock, the stimulus was exactly the same in all three instances. The only thing that was different was what was going on in here, what they believed about the other person. That's the way it is in our relationships. If we believe the best, and in this case, it's true.
It's true. This is not wishful thinking.
It's not yeah. wishful thinking. If you can just believe the best of your spouse and what they are doing and saying at times, even when it hurts at times, it hurts less. I mean, just kind of out of self-interest,
yeah.
it feels like we should be doing that.
Do you want me to give them an example?
Yeah.
Because,
I
examples, I think, always help us kind of grasp. But so let me give you one to help you grasp what this looks like. So one of the things that we often did was, you know, we're talking about, like, help us, you know, understand how you handle difficulties and whatever. And there was this one young couple. They were pregnant with their first child. And they had moved recently from the city to a more rural area. And the one thing that was they were kind of bummed about was that when they were both kind of foodies, that was like their thing. They loved going to all the neat restaurants in the city. And it was, you know, something they'd been doing for several years in their newlywed years. But now they've moved to this sort of rural area, and that's really not an option for them. And then suddenly, this famous chef from the city actually moves out to their area and starts building this, like, really nice restaurant. And you had to get on the reservation list, like, 6 months in advance. And so they said, you know what we should do is actually go get on get a reservation, and that will be our last big romantic dinner before the baby comes and our lives change forever, right? And so they were so excited as the restaurant was being built and as it was opening and people are going in and they're hearing all the great things about it. And they were every time they'd be driving by, they'd be like, 4 more weeks, 2 more weeks, 3 more days. They were getting excited. And then the night of the big date comes and the husband takes a late client call and misses the reservation. Yeah.
Yeah. You can hear a groan, I mean,
yes.
from every man in the place.
Probably, yes. And this is one of those things where, like, it they're not getting it back. Like, it's not like you can just go in half an hour later and get the reservation. They gave it away. And so I'm asking the wife, how did you handle this? What were you thinking? Like, I wanted, because this is one of the happy couples, right? These are these very thriving marriages, but, you know, you have disappointments just like anybody else. And so I'm like, how did you handle that? What were you thinking? And she said, I was like so upset and my brain started to go in all these different directions. Like, is this what our life is going to be like now that we're going to have a baby and he's going to be working all the time and he's going to care more about work than about us, but, you know, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, my thoughts started to spiral. And then I went, no. No. He was just as excited as I was. He was going 2 more days also. So there must be another explanation. By the way, write that down. That there must be another explanation is a key mental tool for the happiest couples. And remember, you're believing the truth because this is someone who cares about you. So there has to be another explanation. So she said, so I knew there has to be another explanation. And so when he comes running in very late, they've given the table away. He's like, he's completely aware. He's in tons of trouble. And he was all, you know, upset. She was able to say, she had worked all that through in her head. So she was able to say, different than what she would have said originally, which was, I'm so disappointed, because, you know, you have to be able to say, I'm so disappointed. And she said, what happened? And she's assuming something happened, right? Like, she's assuming there's a reason. And he said, because she was assuming that there was a reason, his defenses, because obviously he was pretty upset himself, his defenses all lowered, and he was able to explain more calmly what had happened, which was, it turns out, that at 6 o'clock, when he was about to leave the office, the main client, one of the main customers of this company that he apparently worked for, called in on his phone, and it was one of those displays where you can see the name of the person calling in big letters. And he was like, I was going to let it go to voicemail, and I turned my head, and my boss is standing right behind my cube. And he's like, I felt like I absolutely could not let that go to voicemail because, listen, I can't be on anybody's question mark list. He's like, I've got a wife and a baby on the way. I absolutely could not afford that. So he said, so I took the call, and that's what ended up causing the problem. Now, you could say, well, maybe you could have called him back from your cell phone on the drive. Like, but I don't know. Like, maybe his job is something that requires him to be working in front of a computer on a spreadsheet or something, and a phone call on the drive wouldn't work. Regardless, what was the key there was that his intentions towards his wife were good, not bad. And so that, the way that they handled, each of them handled that process, especially the wife, the way she handled her disappointment, it ended up preserving their happiness as a couple rather than damaging it. And that's one of the things that we saw consistently, is that the people who had gone from difficult marriages into being the most highly happy couples, this is one of the big patterns that got them there.
Before we jump to the next one.
Okay.
I'd like to have you explain, because I can imagine that some of you out there are going, okay, I understand how you identified the happiest couples when you were talking to them. How'd you do it on the survey to know that the people who are answering are actually highly happy or whatever?
Do you want me to tackle that really quickly? Does anybody care about this? Okay. Because some people like care about this kind of stuff, others don't. Okay. So just really briefly, how we did on the survey identify the highly happy couples. So briefly, we did this, like we said, these were big nationally representative surveys, and this was called a matched pair survey, where we anonymously, they were taking it anonymously and independently, but it was both the husband and the wife taking the survey. And we knew, even though, again, it was anonymous, that this husband 237, is married to wife 237. Like, we knew who was married to who. And in the middle of the survey, we had a whole process they went through, but one of the questions was our main filter question. They just didn't know it. And it was just a general survey question. And it was, are you generally happy in your marriage these days and enjoying being married? Okay, kind of innocuous. And so we gave them 5 answer choices. And so the first answer choice was yes, exclamation point. Right? Really happy. Yes, exclamation point. Number 2 was yes most of the time. Number three was sometimes yes, sometimes no. Number four was no, not really. And five was no, exclamation point. Okay. And so what we did was if the husband and the wife, independent of each other, never knowing what the other person answered, if they both said yes, exclamation point, those are the people we wanted to look at. Those are the people that we wanted to compare to everybody else. So we divided the world on this survey into three groups. We had the highly happy couples, or the yes couples, we call them. The second group was happy marriages. Now, because we're not just talking about really, really happy and like doing bad. No, like most couples in most marriages in the country are generally pretty happy. And so the second group was happy marriages. And we put in that group anyone who answered one or two, but neither person answered three, four, or five. Because you could have someone who says, yes, we're really happy, but if their spouse went, meh, you wouldn't say, you couldn't really put them for sure into a happy marriage category. Maybe, but you couldn't be sure of that. And so that was the second group, was the happy marriages. And then the third group was everybody else. So if one or both spouses answered sometimes yes, sometimes no, or on down, that became that third group. And it was basically, you know, anything from, you know, we're okay, but it's just kind of hard right now, all the way down to couples that were really, really struggling.
Now, can I give one caveat on all of that? Do not leave here today and look at your spouse and say, so what would you rate us? Nothing good will come from that question at this point. Seriously. It was really the way we conducted it.
We had a whole scientific process that we're not taking you through.
Just look at your spouse and say, I appreciate that, but Shanti and Jeff says I don't have to answer that question.
I shouldn't answer that question. Okay. So, next
yeah,
topic.
So the next topic, it's kind of a fun one. Love it. When we would interview these happy couples that were identified to us, we would oftentimes ask them. So a lot of them had been engaged in giving premarital counseling and advice to young marrieds, all of those sorts of things.
Because, like, if you're, for example, in a church and you're known as having a happy marriage, people always come to you and they're like, would you do some premarital work with us
We'd say, what's one bit of advice that you give to other couples about how to have, you know, a happy marriage? And they say, well, it's pretty easy. Most of them answered this way. You never go to bed mad. And Shanti would go?
Ephesians 4:26. Yeah. Don't let the sun go down in your anger.
Yeah.
Don't go to bed mad.
And Shanti would go, oh, great, great. Do you guys ever go to bed mad? And they'd say, well, we think it's an absolute principle that is very good to, and she'd say.
And I would always go, no, I totally get it. It's a really important principle. I totally agree with you. But that's not actually what I'm asking you, Mr. and Mrs. Happy Couple. What I'm actually asking is, do you go to bed mad ever? And it was hilarious because I think out of the 1,000 couples, I think there were 3 that we found that literally never went to bed mad. And so what we found was that actually amongst the happiest couples, there was this really important nuance. Because yes, absolutely, striving to work it out before bedtime, whatever. But they all said in the end that when you have 2 exhausted, angry, upset people who are trying to duke it out at 1 in the morning, like nothing good comes from that point on. And you're going to like agree to something you're going to resent the next day, or you're going to say something you wish you could take back, or whatever it is. And so what we actually found was really interesting. The happiest couples, statistically, the biggest thing that changed wasn't what they did the night before. The biggest thing that was different between them and everybody else, including the happy couples, was what they did the next morning. Because it turns out, you know what it's like sometimes when you're at odds and you go to bed and then you wake up the next morning and you're like, what was that about? Right? Like just a good night's sleep can sometimes solve it, right? But if the good night's sleep had not solved it, if that issue was still there the next day, statistically the biggest difference was the happiest couples dealt with it. They didn't let it go. Everybody else, the happy marriages and the so-so marriages, everybody else was far more likely to just let it float away and hope it kind of went away. The happiest couples didn't. They dealt with it. And so I thought that was a really interesting little sort of finding about the habits.
So this particular habit, and I love the title that Shanti came up for the chapter on this one, and it's the title in the chapter is called Go to Bed Mad. You know, not the advice you mostly hear from
in
a Christian faith-based book. But when we were doing getting these findings and writing and figuring out how to write this, it actually was kind of difficult for us because up to this point, everything that we had ever researched and found and been able to articulate dovetailed with Scripture. And, you know, it all just fit. Truth is truth. This one felt,
I love the fact that all this research we've done over the years has always backed up what the Bible has said all along.
Yeah, yeah. But this one felt at odds. And Shanti quoted Ephesians 4:26. You know,
in your anger, don't sin. Don't let the sun go down in your anger.
I'm going to back up a little. When we were first married, that was a touchstone for us and for her. So we would be at odds and she would say, look, I'm an early to bed kind of guy. And, you know, I'm not thinking clearly or I don't want to be up after 9:30. You know, it's just the way it is. But she's saying, we can't until we resolve this.
We resolve this.
If we want God's favor on our marriage, we have to, what the Scripture says, we have to obey it. And I went, I'd kind of go all lawyer mode because I'm a lawyer. And I'd say, look, the sun was already down when we started this fight. Therefore, I have 24 hours before it sets again. I'm going to sleep.
David over there is like, yes. David and Jeff were roommates
in law
school. We
were in law school together. So technically, I think I was correct. Relationally, not so much. So here's the issue. Well, actually, why don't you explain what that pastor said to us?
Yes, I mean, because I have to admit, like, I was really kind of stirred up once we started seeing what we were seeing on this one, because I had been thinking, you know, all these other things that we found, they all dovetail with the Scripture. And how can we put something in a book that's unbiblical? Like, we can't do that. And also I started to think, like, wait a minute, if it's unbiblical, why does it work? Like, I was very confused. So we were speaking at a church where the pastor, we were talking ahead of time with the pastor in his office, and he was not only a pastor, he was also a licensed marriage and family therapist. And when I was explaining this concern, he started laughing, actually, and he was like, go to the Bible, and he's like, look at Ephesians 4:26, and you can do the same thing on your Bible app or at your Bible. He said, look at the Ephesians 4:26, and there's a little caret there that's a cross-reference. It turns out the Apostle Paul was quoting a verse from the Old Testament, something his audience would have been very familiar with, right? And so here is the cross-reference verse that he was quoting from Psalm 4:4, okay? In your anger, do not sin. Think about it overnight and remain silent.
Isn't that beautiful? To those of us who need to get sleep or are slow processors.
Or whatever. And so that to me was like, oh. And so the pastor, he said, and this, you know, pastor therapist, he said, look, he said, Ephesians 4:26 is often quoted as a marriage scripture. He's like, it's not. It's not talking about marriage. It's talking about living in community. But still, marriage is a type of community.
It is.
And he said, but if you look at it, Paul is quoting Psalm 4:4, and he said the key to both of those seems to be in your anger, do not sin. If you need to duke it out at 1 a.m. to not sin in your anger, do that. He said, if you need to think about it overnight and remain silent to not sin in your anger, do that. And to me, that took so much of the pressure off, because it's how does it work in our marriage to not sin
now,
in our anger?
We're going to talk about some things tomorrow about the differences between men and women. And some of it is the way our brains neurologically are wired differently. And one of the things that we'll be sharing is sometimes it's much easier for a guy to close off a troubling thought, just put it out of his mind, than it is for a woman.
I know that's a shock.
I know that sounds...
And
so fellas, just so you know, Scripture also says that we're to love our wives as Christ loved the church. I mean, that's pretty high bar there. Just know that when you say, look, we're just not going to talk about this because you can't figure your thoughts out in the moment, and you go to sleep and you can put it out of your mind and fall asleep, she may not be able to do that. So there are some steps that the happiest couples did.
Yeah.
And we'll unpack those a bit more tomorrow. But just keep that in mind. Your wife isn't wired exactly like you. So this could be a painful experience for her.
Yeah. Okay. So secret number three. Okay. So on to number three. So I'm going to give you a scenario. And this was Jeff's favorite thing to do with these with these happiest couples.
When we were interviewing them, this is a lot the working group, not necessarily the couples that we were interviewing in the churches.
No,
but
you
some
did
of
this.
Them,
oh,
but,
you it, you
but,
loved poking the
for
bear
the most part,
with this one.
The part I really found enjoyable was I would ask them to take us through their last conflict or their last argument or fight. And what would oftentimes happen is they are recounting that. They're beginning to relive some of the emotions in it and getting a little amped up along the way.
And Jeff was like, hee, 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 this is kind of fun.
Well,
like,
I'm not
I
a therapist.
Like...
I'm probably not a good guy either. But, you know, it was enlightening.
It was actually really instructive. And so I'm going to tell you what we heard from one of the happy couples, one of the happy husbands. And I want you to put yourself in our shoes, and as you're listening, I want you to try to diagnose what is it that this husband is doing that is actually one of the things that's responsible for the fact that they're one of the highly happy couples, okay? So just put that analyst hat on as you're listening. So we asked this one couple, take us through your last fight, and they were like, oh, this just happened last week. And so what had happened, the husband was a senior executive at a consulting company. He had been working these really horrible, like 70, 80-hour weeks in order to put together this deal that on the Thursday before, he was going to get on a plane at like 6 in the morning and fly away and sign this big deal that he'd been working on for months and months and months. And the day before, he called his wife, stay-at-home mom, 3 little kids. He called his wife 3 times and said, honey, you know, all my shirts are at the dry cleaners. I have literally nothing for tomorrow morning. So I can go to the dry cleaners or I can get somebody to go if you can't. Are you sure? Yeah, honey, I got it. I'll go to the dry cleaners. I promise. Are you sure? I got it, honey. And he called 3 times to just be sure. And so he comes home at 9 o'clock at night the night before to find out that the dry cleaners are closed and she forgot to get the shirts. And so he is like so upset. And I'm like, what did you do? What were you thinking? He was like, I was so upset. I couldn't even talk to her. And I said, what did you do physically? He was like, well, I had to actually just get away because I was so upset. And he said, I went stomping down to the basement. Apparently he had a woodworking hobby. And so it was down, his workshop was downstairs. And he said, so I'm down there in the workshop and I've got my rubber mallet and I'm like pounding these pieces of wood together. And I'm like, what are you thinking? And he said, I'm thinking that I asked her 3 times and she always does this. And then he said, but that's not really fair because, you know, the kids were sick. And he describes how she had this insane day of taking all the kids to different doctors and pharmacists and having to go back and forth and all these things as he's like hammering the mallet. And he said, and so that's not really fair. And even though she had this horrible day, when I came home at 9 o'clock at night, she had dinner waiting for me. And she always has dinner for me, no matter how late I come home. And she's such a good wife. And why am I being such a jerk? What was he doing?
Processing.
What was he doing? What did somebody say? Processing.
Processing.
He was processing. What was he doing as he was processing? He was saying something out loud. What was he doing? What was he processing? He was putting himself in her shoes. Keep going. Giving her the benefit of the doubt. How? What was he actually doing? He was appreciating her. He was talking himself out of being mad. And he was doing it by switching from thinking about the things that were driving him nuts to thinking about the good things that she always did. This was basically putting Philippians 4:8 into action. When you are told you have these inner, because Philippians 4 is all, it starts with this interpersonal conflict in the church. And the Apostle Paul says, here's how you deal with that. And you're supposed to rejoice in all things and give thanks in all things. How do you do that? Well, Philippians 4:8 gives the prescription. You think on those things that are lovely. And you think about those things that are excellent. You think about those things that are worthy of praise rather than the things that are worthy of driving you nuts. And that is something we saw over and over and over again in The Happiest Couples.
You know, as we were doing the research for The Happiest Couples study, we kind of looked at each other and went, you know, we're in that happiest crew. Couple.
When did that happen?
You know, and We honestly had a good marriage. I mean,
yeah, we would have been in group number two.
We were probably happy, relatively sometimes. You know, because
dipping into group number three every now and then.
Nah, well, yeah. there were plenty of times when one of us slept in the guest room because
it's like I'm not sleeping next to somebody who doesn't love me.
So we had those moments, and you know, it happened, but. We realized, and this was around 2010 or something like that, that we were, you know, kind of doing the research. And we're in the happiest couple. When did that happen? And we kind of backed up in our minds, and we came to a particular point. And it was, it really began when...
Not too long before that.
Not too long before that. So, Shanti, when she turned 39...
Just a couple years ago.
Oh, I'm sorry.
did you just when laugh?
I did. I don't know why.
Okay.
When she turned 39, I had this idea that I needed to, for her 40th birthday, do something great. And, you know, I had thought, what can I do? Because gift giving has never been a particular gift of mine. And so what I did was I decided that I was going to capture every day the things that were transpiring in our lives, how I was feeling, how we had interacted, things that the kids had done. And I was going to journal that every day.
Even if it was just a paragraph.
Yeah,
if it was
but
just
every day. And at the end of that year, before the day before her birthday, I was going to take it, get it all bound up into a book, and hand her this book, A Year in the Life of Shanti.
For my 40th birthday.
For her 40th birthday. That was going to be the present.
You know every guy hates you right now, right?
Like, yeah, probably. But let me, if you're thinking of me as a paragon of gift giving, I can disabuse you of that. Because, for example, when I've never been good at it. When Shanti was pregnant with our daughter, our first child, she was pregnant over Christmas time. That particular year. And for Christmas, I gave her a pregnancy workout video.
Yes, he did.
And my friend David,
and David was
can
like,
attest that that actually happened.
Yes.
I didn't counsel with him before I picked the gift out. I did not. But yeah, so I have been very poor at giving gifts. But back to the story, because here's what would happen. I would make these notes on pieces of paper or mentally or whatever, and every night at the end of the night, I would go down to my home office, and I had a Word document, and I would transcribe and put those things in. And a number of times while I'm doing that, we are at odds. We are not feeling particularly loving toward one another at that point. And I'm just hammering those keys and writing, and then you did this. And that went on for, you know, a couple of days whenever those times would happen. And I started to think, you know, our kids could read this maybe 25 or 30 years from now and go, gosh, Dad, you were pretty harsh in some of those days. And I started thinking about that and thought, you know, that's not the legacy image I want to leave them with or her with. And so we still had those moments.
And you wanted to capture it honestly.
I wanted to capture it honestly. So I would go down, and I'm still angry, and I'm writing that stuff. But for some reason, I knew that it was kind of harsh. So I would start to say something like, but you're always so great at this. And I would start to recount those things that she does so well that I oftentimes forget to tell her how much I appreciate or how much I'm thankful for. And so what ended up happening is when I would get through that kind of list of the positives, all of a sudden the steam was gone. And I'd come up to bed and it would be fine. I wasn't angry. It was just gone. And all of a sudden, unbeknownst to me, that began to be a habit that I would just do.
You told me when we finally sort of backfilled this and went, wait a minute, this is what happened, you know, just a few years ago. And this is why we're in that highly happy camp. Like, that's what one of the main things that happened, because I had no idea he was doing this. This was completely one-sided. It changed everything without me doing a thing. And the thing that he told me as we were analyzing it a couple years later was, he said, and you know what I realized? It wasn't just in the moment when I'm down there mad. Away from you and typing and then going, but that's not fair because you do these things. He said, because, you know, I would be mad and like writing down notes or mentally going, I have to remember to tell this story in the journal. And he said, as he started thinking about what he would say, he literally at that point started to say, oh, but also you do these things so well. And so in the moment, the steam started to go away.
Well,
it is. And he didn't realize it, just like that happy husband.
Right.
That I told the story about, didn't realize, but he was literally talking himself out of being mad.
And it's a practice. It's something that can be attained and done.
Well, remember what that one woman told us? And this is actually what we ended up using as the title of the chapter. She said, because she was one of the people who had gone from being very difficult marriage to a very happy marriage. And she said, my whole marriage, my whole life, really, I have let my feelings boss me around. And she said, I realized if I wanted a happy marriage, I had to boss my feelings around. And that process that we've just talked about, that process is something that anybody can do. And if you're interested, I'm going to give you, do we have enough time for
yes,
me to
please.
Explain this
yes.
briefly? You
mm-hmm.
sure? Okay. I'm going to suggest that you consider, there is a process that we tested empirically. It's called the 30-Day Kindness Challenge.
This was another research project.
This was another research project. And it's basically a boot camp to help you learn how to boss your feelings around. And so I'm just going to tell you what it is briefly. And then if you're interested in seeing more, or if you forget what I said, go to jointhekindnesschallenge.com. And it has all this information on there, jointhekindnesschallenge.com. But this is a 30-day process that will radically retrain your heart and your mind and how you boss your feelings around. So basically, you pick a person that you are going to do what we call the 30-day kindness challenge for. And this is somebody that you want a better relationship with. And this is somebody that it has to be somebody you see relatively regularly. You can do this plenty of times later for other people who you don't see as regularly or whatever, but for the first time, for it to be a kind of a boot camp to retrain your brain, it has to be one person that you see relatively regularly. And this could be, you could do this for your spouse. You might have a good relationship, you just want to make it better. You could do this for that difficult colleague at work or your mother-in-law or whatever. Like, I did it for our daughter who was 16 years old at the time. And, you know, great kid, but 16, right? And so here's what you do. You're going to do the same three things every day for 30 days. The first of them is one of the things that is the most important for retraining your brain, because what you do for 30 days is you don't say anything negative about that person, either to them or about them to somebody else. Because that is often where we sabotage things, right? Like, I can be polite to Jeff. I don't say anything negative to him. But if I go behind the scenes to a friend and I'm like, ugh, you would not believe what he did. I don't realize it, but I'm sabotaging how I feel about him. So that's the first thing. Nothing negative, nothing unkind for 30 days. Second thing, every day for 30 days, you find one thing you can sincerely praise. You find one thing you can sincerely affirm, and you tell that person, and you tell somebody else. And so you're looking for those things, and as you say them, you start to notice them more, okay? The third thing every day for 30 days is to do a small action of kindness or generosity for that person. And this can be like it can be acts of service, like you bring your difficult colleague that you're doing this for a cup of coffee after lunch. Like, everybody thinks of acts of kindness as being acts of service, and that's great. But like, it can be so much broader. Like, for example, I did this for our daughter, and she would often come running into my home office while I'm working on a deadline, and she'd be like, hey, Mom, watch this little YouTube video with me. And I'd be like, in an hour, honey. And I realized an action of generosity is taking my attention off of what I'm doing and putting it on her while she's excited about it, not an hour later. So these are just little things, but what we found is if you do this, you really retrain what you focus on, and you retrain the habits, and you are actively learning how to boss your feelings around.
What percentage said that they had an improved?
So it ended up being, we did pre and post surveys, and 89% of relationships improved, which is an enormous number in social science.
And the funny thing was, it wasn't necessarily because the target of your kindness changed into a kinder, better
Guess
person.
Guess who changed? Okay? It's us who changed when we do that.
We should probably go to the next one.
I know, we probably should.
So the next one I think we should talk about is what the happiest couples, how they treated one another.
Yep.
In,
do you want me to start
that
one?
Yeah, start that, okay. And then I'll jump in with the study.
Great. So one of the factors that we discovered that were common to most of the happiest couples is that they treated each other first and foremost like best friends. That was like their way of treating one another. First, that they were best friends with one another.
And, you know, it's always kind of funny. It's like, if you were to think, how do people become best friends?
Yeah. What is it that does that?
What is it that does it? And there have been a number of studies on this particular topic. And if I were to ask you guys, what do you think it is that is at play when two people become best friends? many of us would kind of, what's the most important factor? Many of us would probably say something like, well, probably, you know, similar temperaments, shared values, you know, different similar interests, you know, that sort of thing. All of those are important, but they pale in comparison to the number one factor, which is
far more important.
Far more important.
Radically important, which is geographic proximity.
It really doesn't sound very sexy, does it?
You are the best friends with the people you see the most often.
And spend the most
time
with.
And spend the most time with. And that one thing, we all know when I say that, we all actually know that's true, right? Because we've all had really close friends where one of us moved away, looking at you, Treadwells, and rudely moved here to D.C. from Atlanta. And when you move away, you still love each other, you still stay in contact, all that. You still have a great friendship, but you're not as day-to-day intimate. And the happiest couples, one of the things that we found when they, again, treating each other first and foremost like best friends, they actually just spent time together. They hung out. It wasn't even, we were expecting to find, oh, they did date nights every 2 weeks. And that wasn't it. I mean, plenty of them did, but it was more about the fact that they actually made a point of spending time together. And it wasn't necessarily that they're like staring deeply into each other's eyes and having these big, long, meaningful
conversations.
They
went to Home Depot together.
Yes.
Seriously.
Seriously. Some of them
absolutely.
Some of them had hobbies together, or they just would like sit and have coffee, you know, whatever. Can I tell them the example of that one young couple?
We've got a few minutes.
This was one of the most profound things that we heard. This was a couple that had been in the most desperate place, and they had moved to being one of the most highly happy couples by the time that we were doing this research. And this young woman described what had changed, and she said she and her husband had three little kids, and she said they were so miserable in their marriage. Like, they were this close to giving up. And I don't actually know what caused her to do this. I don't know if this was like the Holy Spirit or if this was like logical. But she said, I decided to look at how much time we were spending together every week, not like comparing notes about kids' schedules, but literally just as friends, just like catching up and talking. And she said they had an incredibly busy schedule with all sorts of things going on with the kids and work and whatever. And she said, when I looked at it, it was 15 minutes a week. Like, we had almost no time together. And she was like, no wonder we're at each other's throats. Like, we're not even friends anymore.
Well, and honestly, sometimes when you're feeling at odds, one of the things you kind of just think is probably a good thing is let's go to neutral corners so we're not at each other's throats. But it's building those walls.
You just aren't hanging out with each other. And so what this young woman said, she's like, look, there wasn't a whole lot that we could change in the moment. But she's like, I realized we had to change something now. Like, it was that in much of an emergency. And she said, I looked at our schedule, and she said, in like this immediate near term, she said, I saw only one thing that we could change. Apparently, the husband every Tuesday and Thursday would take their 7 or 8 year old son to
Little League.
Okay. And she said, there is no reason in the world that I should have to load up the younger kids and drive across town with him. But that was 20 minutes in the car on the way there and 20 minutes on the way back twice a week. And she said, at the beginning, that is literally all that we changed. And she said, but we started to like have a chance finally to like catch up on some things, and how was the big meeting and what happened with the kids today.
Showing interest in one another.
And being able to catch up, right? And like be friends again. And so that's one thing that if anyone is in a process in their marriage where things are frustrating or difficult right now, this is one of those little things that you don't realize makes an enormous difference.
So
and we need to go to break, but we have one more.
One more real quick, real short. And this one is, hopefully you'll find it really encouraging. One of the things that Shanti does is that I don't do is she is positively fearless at approaching people. So if we're in the food court somewhere and she sees a couple that looks like they're enjoying themselves together, she'll go up and talk to them and ask them why they're
and
enjoying
I
each other.
I usually carry one of my books with me so that I'm like, I promise I'm not a psycho. I'm a social researcher.
She's almost got arrested.
You, oh, yeah.
She's seriously,
no, seriously,
on the subway
I've almost gotten
in Atlanta.
Arrested. Yeah.
The security had to stop her from doing some of these things. But anyways, so here's what she would oftentimes do. She would ask them, why you guys look like you're really happy, and they would agree and ask them why.
And this wasn't
wasn't
part of the scientific. This is like, it's interesting. And here's what so often happens. Like, I'm talking to people in the airport and in the food court and in a coffee shop, like random. And so often when I'd say, so what would you attribute your happiness to? They would look at each other and look at me and go, it's because of Jesus Christ. And you could tell they were like, oh, this is a chance to witness to a social researcher. Like, this is so exciting, right? But that one thing, what we found with the happiest couples is they are far more likely to be putting God at the center of their marriage. And this is something we don't have time to get into. You can ask a question about it if you're interested. But just statistically know that if you've ever heard that things like the rate of divorce is the same in the church, or that Christians have just as, you know, likely to have difficult marriages as anybody else. Yeah, of course we have difficult marriages, but are we just as likely? No. The rate of divorce in the church is drastically lower. One of the things that is a fascinating finding is that every study that's been done on this, and by the way, this isn't hyperbole, this is actually accurate, has found that people who actually put God at the center and attend church, like that's one of the factors you can measure, that they attend church regularly are far more likely to have thriving marriages. Because you've seen the God, husband, wife triangle, right? You've seen that where God is at the top, husband and wife are at the two corners. And as you get closer to him, you are getting closer to each other too. And it's true. It is the way God has designed it to work.
And the community.
And the community of believers.
Believers.